All views and opinions expressed in this podcast may lead to learning. All information provided is for educational and developmental purposes only and is not intended to be a substitute for a growth mindset. Before taking action, please consult your motivation.
This is the Teacher Talking Time Podcast.
Yeah, I think teachers can benefit from any discussion of corrective feedback because that would help them to understand what not only this area is, but also how complex this issue is. And that would also probe them into finding more and more about feedback and learning more about them. And the more they learn, then the better able they are to make decisions when they are providing feedback. So we cannot tell teachers what kind of feedback they have to provide. Eventually, it is the teacher that has to make a decision whether I have to provide an explicit type of feedback and an implicit type of feedback. And all this research can inform the teachers in terms of making an informed decision when they have to.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teacher Talking Time podcast brought to you by Learn Your English. To those of you who are new listening to this podcast for the first time, the main aim of our podcast is to really deconstruct language teaching to bridge the gap between research and personal practice. Each episode is dedicated to our vision of education, continuous growth that is accessible, affordable, and appropriate to your context. Andrew, we also have a membership, don't we?
We absolutely do. Our Learn Your English Teacher Development Membership, where you can join a community of curious teachers and educators who want to achieve more without having to plan and teach more. Leo, you like to say, teach more mindfully, right?
That's right. And that's what we try to do with our membership. We try to provide content, mentoring, courses, and more importantly, a community of practice to help teachers plan less so they can actually have time to develop more. And what we focus on, Andrew, mindful and meaningful teaching, better thinking, continuous learning, developing a healthy mind, purposeful creativity, mental tools for thought, and humanistic education. Andrew, if somebody wants to become a member, what do they have to do?
Oh, so simple. Just go to courses.learnyourenglish.net and become a member right there. You'll have access to all of our materials, not only for this month, but for all the months that you missed in the past. If you want more information, check out learnyourenglish.net/memberships.
I'm Deepika, an English teacher from India, and you're listening to Teacher Talking Time, the Learn Your English podcast.
We are thrilled to announce our partnership with Carleton University in Ottawa, Canada, for this podcast series on corrective feedback. A big thank you to Dr. Eva Karcheva and her MA class to produce this interview series, which we know will be a fantastic analysis of corrective feedback and its role in language learning and teaching.
This series has 8 episodes focusing on aspects of corrective feedback. Corrective feedback is a crucial area of second language acquisition, and there has been a lot of research done recently to shed light on the role it plays in student learning. 7 of the interviews in this series were conducted by students in Dr. Karcheva's MA class as means of assessment to do 2 primary things. Number 1, to connect researchers to their audience. And number 2, to have her students have a greater level of understanding and investment in the research they were reading.
That's right, Leo, and we're excited to provide an outlet for this project and to give not only new voices an opportunity to be heard, but to allow for new podcasting experiences for many. If you or your institution is interested in producing a mini series, either as a means of assessment or otherwise, please reach out to us at info@learnyourenglish.com. Dr. Hossein Nasaji is an award winner, a scholar, and a professor of applied linguistics in the Department of Linguistics at the University of Victoria here in Victoria, British Columbia. He has written extensively on corrective feedback and has published more than 100 articles in leading journals. His forthcoming handbook on corrective feedback, the Cambridge Handbook of Corrective Feedback in Second Language Learning and Teaching, co-authored by Eva Karchava, is a comprehensive volume that discusses current issues and perspectives on corrective feedback, as well as their applications to second language teaching and learning. Conducting the interview today are Kelsey Ulrich Verslicken and Lana Hatch.
Hello, everyone. My name is Kelsey Ulrich Verslicken.
My name is Lana Hatch Hamid, and we are graduate students at Carleton University in Ottawa in the Applied Linguistics and Discourse Study program.
And today we are absolutely thrilled for the opportunity to not only collaborate with Teacher Talking Time podcast and Learn Your English, but also to be interviewing one of the preeminent scholars in applied linguistics, Hussein Nassaji.
Certainly. Hussein Nassaji, we are thrilled to have you joining us in this podcast.
It's a pleasure to be here with you, and I'm very delighted for the opportunity too.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us. We'd like to start just getting to know a little bit more about you and how you got started in corrective feedback.
As you just mentioned, I have a number of areas of research, but corrective feedback is one of the areas that I have recently started to work on, not recently, but in the past 10 years or so. And there have been a number of reasons for that, because myself as a second language learner, I have been very much interested in ways in which I can develop my accuracy in language. So that was why I became interested in corrective feedback as a language learner. And I was also a language teacher. So I was very much interested in finding out how I can help my students. So corrective feedback then came to me as a very good strategy and tool to help my students. So for that reason, I became interested in corrective feedback as well. Then I am a second language acquisition researcher. So I am also interested in finding out how second language acquisition occurs and how learning is facilitated. And then I became very much interested in corrective feedback as a means of facilitating second language acquisition. So there are these three main reasons why I'm interested in corrective feedback.
Okay, so in your opinion, Hussein, what role does corrective feedback have in second language acquisition?
As far as the roles, I would say many roles, or quite a number of roles corrective feedback can play in second language acquisition. One is that corrective feedback can provide opportunities for noticing and attention to language form. And that is something that is highlighted in current theories and research in second language acquisition. And it's considered to be necessary for second language development. It provides opportunities for noticing the gap in knowledge, and also opportunities for noticing what's called the hole in knowledge. I think I do not have time to go into details about these things, but I think noticing is a very important role that corrective feedback plays. It also provides opportunities for interaction and negotiation of meaning, particularly interactional feedback, and when the feedback is, the feedback occurs during interaction and communication. It is essential because from the interactionist perspective, interaction is key to language acquisition. And corrective feedback would provide opportunities for conversational strategies such as confirmation checks, particularly when it is oral and it is interactive, reformulation, clarification requests, and so on, all of which would signal to learners to repair their communicative problems. So corrective feedback then provides opportunities for interaction and negotiation of meaning. Corrective feedback also provides opportunities for practice, because when students receive corrective feedback, then they correct their forms, their erroneous forms, and then that would provide opportunities for practice, which is considered very important from different theories in second language acquisition, such as information processing theories and also skill acquisition theories. Practice would help convert declarative knowledge to procedural knowledge. and corrective feedback would provide that opportunity for learners to move from declarative knowledge to procedural knowledge. If I want to go on, corrective feedback would also provide opportunities for negative evidence, because we now know that second language learners, particularly adult second language learners, cannot develop full fluency and accuracy without negative evidence, which refers to the information about what is not possible in a given language. So corrective feedback would provide opportunities for negative evidence. It provides opportunities for output. Output hypothesis and the role of output is recognized in language acquisition. So what corrective feedback does, it provides opportunities for pushed output, because it pushes learners to produce appropriate and accurate output. And also it gives students opportunities to produce modified output, because when students receive feedback, they have an opportunity to revise their erroneous utterance. So corrective feedback would provide opportunities for modified output. It also, if I want to add, it provides opportunities for cognitive comparison, because cognitive comparison theories hold that learning is facilitated when learners become involved in cognitive comparison. And that refers when learners have an opportunity to compare their erroneous output to the model provided by the feedback or through the feedback. And then the students have that cognitive comparison opportunity through corrective feedback. So corrective feedback plays that very important role as well. And I think we'll talk later probably about sociocultural theory that highlights scaffolding. And corrective feedback would provide opportunities for scaffolding, which is a kind of assisted help. We'll talk about that later in more detail. So this is just a very brief review of what roles corrective feedback would play in second language acquisition.
So it certainly sounds like there is a huge expanse of research and knowledge about just how effective corrective feedback can be, how helpful, how, you know, promoting of learning that it could be. Is there another side to that coin where perhaps there's best practices for teachers and how teachers can then use that effective feedback to really help those learners grow and develop?
I think if we look at research, the first premise is that corrective feedback facilitates language acquisition, and teachers are very much interested in that. And that is not something that teachers are not aware of. So teachers use corrective feedback in the classroom. So that is a kind of like normal in language classrooms. What research is showing now is not only whether corrective feedback facilitates language acquisition, but the different ways in which it facilitates language acquisition. And what kind of feedback, for example, facilitates our language acquisition and under what condition. And these are the things that are very helpful for language teachers when it comes to research and theory and on corrective feedback.
I'm just interested, like, what role does like corrective culture have in giving or receiving feedback?
Again, I would like to go back to research that has looked at the effectiveness of corrective feedback. If we look at research that has been conducted in this area, we see different results. And these results, different results, are because of the differences that exist in learners, in the learner's context, in the learner's background, learner's language proficiency, learner's culture, and so on. So we can say that that is one of the factors that can affect the effectiveness of the feedback. The kind of value, for example, that students put on feedback, the kind of, for example, a belief and attitudes that they have towards feedback. And research has shown that these are all important factors that would interact with the effectiveness of feedback. For example, when students value feedback and when students value and have a very good attitude toward corrective feedback, which these things are all cultural, then they pay attention more to corrective feedback and they consider it valuable. So I would say that culture would play a very important role depending on how students see or learners see and what kind of attitude they have towards feedback.
Okay, great. So it's kind of like an effective factor for how willing students are to notice and then apply.
Exactly. Well, that could be a mediating factor in the effectiveness mm-hmm. of feedback.
Sorry, I want to jump in. Just, does that go the other way, Hossein? Does a teacher's culture affect their willingness to give feedback?
Exactly. And I think that is exactly, it's not just the students. For example, if the teacher has a positive attitude to the feedback, so that would change or that would kind of mediate the ways in which the teacher would provide feedback. Mm-hmm. So one thing that is coming to be known as a very important factor is the match between the students and the teacher's perspectives on feedback. For example, when there is a match, probably there are more opportunities for more effective kind of feedback. And when there is a mismatch, then there probably might be less opportunities for growth and learning. So definitely the teacher's perspectives, culture, and attitudes would play a very important role in how the teacher would provide the feedback.
So if I may just extend that a little bit. So, you know, both Lena and I have experience in second language classrooms and foreign language classrooms. So is there a divergence as well in the research between these two language learning settings, the second language learning settings and the foreign language learning settings?
Yeah, I think that's a very good question. And that would speak to the role of context, because research is showing that context would play a very important role. And when we talk about context, it's not just, for example, the bigger ESL, EFL context, which would play a role, and I will talk about that a little bit more later. But even, for example, the culture and the context within the classroom has been shown to play a very important role. Because although we are in a classroom, we might have different learning contexts and opportunities in the classroom, depending on the type of task used, or for example, students might be involved in a pair work activity versus, for example, small group activity versus, for example, teacher-fronted activity, these are all different contexts. And research has shown that these different contexts would interact with the effectiveness of feedback. As far as ESL and EFL, that also goes back to the value and also the way students notice feedback. There is some research showing that, for example, recast, which is a very implicit type of feedback, might be more effective for EFL learners than ESL learners. And the reason for that has been because EFL learners are more language conscious, and they also have learned language through grammar-based methods. So they are more conscious when they receive feedback versus, for example, when the people who have been grown in natural instinct context, they might be less aware of the existence of corrective feedback. So when it exists, they may not pay that much attention to that. So that's why, for example, research on recasts has shown that EFL learners might benefit more from recasts than ESL learners because of that fact that I just mentioned. They probably pay more attention to the feedback when they receive it.
Very interesting, actually. Hossein, from your work, we can tell that like you are a strong proponent of corrective feedback. And it seems from our reading that you approach corrective feedback from the perspective of sociocultural theory. So what is sociocultural theory? How does sociocultural theory view corrective feedback in the second language classroom?
As far as my research is concerned, it's not that I just do research within the sociocultural perspective. I have conducted research within different perspectives, because when I look at perspectives, I will look at them as a lens through which we can see things. The sociocultural theory is a very interesting lens through which to look at learning. It's a theoretical perspective on learning that originates mainly from the work of Vygotsky. And that theory emphasizes that human cognition is basically socially mediated and constructed. Therefore, this perspective emphasizes the role of social interaction and social learning in the provision of feedback. Whereas, for example, cognitive theories would emphasize internal processes and the mental
processing aspect of corrective feedback. So both of them are important, but they look at feedback from different perspectives and from different point of views.
Okay, so that was a big question, is what you're saying. Okay, so in terms of that, you know, how does sociocultural theory approach corrective feedback? And you mentioned it a few minutes ago. You talked a little bit about this idea of, you know, negotiation and mediation. Is that really what sociocultural theory focuses on in terms of its understanding of corrective feedback?
That's a very good question. And I think it perhaps in order to answer that, we need to talk a little bit more about sociocultural theory and the notions that are relevant to the sociocultural theory. One thing that I would like to mention here is that I just said that the sociocultural theory would emphasize the role of interaction. Whereas we also see, for example, in language acquisition research, other theories that would emphasize the role of interaction. For example, the interactionist approach would also emphasize the role of interaction. But when, for example, interactionists emphasize the role of interaction, they pay more attention to interaction as a means to facilitate internal processes. Whereas the sociocultural theory focuses on interaction as an integral and inherent part of learning. A learning happens or occurs within interaction. Interaction is not just seen as a tool to mediate other processes, for example, such as noticing and internal and mental processes. So that is something that I think differentiates the sociocultural theory from other theories. But when it comes to in what ways the sociocultural theory would look at feedback, I think we could talk a little bit about the different concepts that are closely related to sociocultural theory. One is the notion of ZPD, zone of proximal development, that refers to the area of learning which is between the learner's current and potential level of development. So if we look at this notion, then feedback is considered to be effective when it happens within this perspective, within this zone. So this notion highlights the importance of developmentally appropriate feedback and developmentally appropriate interaction. Another notion which is very important in sociocultural theory is scaffolding. Scaffolding is help, but not just random help. It's a kind of help that is negotiated between the learner and the teacher within the zone of proximal development. So from the sociocultural theory, feedback is a kind of scaffolded move rather than sudden and one shot and the teacher would just say something. It is kind of like negotiated. Another important notion which is important in the sociocultural theory is the concept of mediation. Mediation refers to the various forms of physical and symbolic tools and artifacts that helps development. So from this perspective then, feedback is not just something that the teacher provides. Feedback can be provided as a mediation tool by, for example, the computer, by other tools, through tasks. And there are various ways in which feedback can be facilitated. So feedback is considered as a mediating tool. And the mediation can take place by others, by self, by artifacts. So, for example, peer feedback is completely justified within the sociocultural theory. Mediation by others happens in social interaction when language learning is facilitated by interaction with peers or experts, such as the teacher or the native speaker. And another final concept that I wanted to talk about, which is also important, it's the concept of regulation. This has very important implications for how feedback should be provided. Regulation is a form of mediation that conceptualizes learning as a process of moving from object regulation to other regulation, to self-regulation. So object regulation is a stage where learner's behavior is controlled by objects. Other regulation is situations where the learner has gained some control over the language form. And self-regulation occurs when the learner becomes skilled and is able to act autonomously. So this notion of regulation highlights a number of important facts and themes in the sociocultural theory and how feedback should be provided. One is that feedback should be gradual. It's not that the feedback, as I just mentioned, is just one shot. Feedback should be gradual and helps learners to move from other regulation to self-regulation. So one important characteristic of effective feedback is that it is not sudden, as I just mentioned. It is progressive, starting with the least direct and explicit assistant, and then gradually moving towards more direct and explicit feedback as needed. So within the sociocultural theory, feedback is considered as a series of steps, not just one kind of like move, but a series of moves that would help learners to move within the zone of the proximal development, as I mentioned, from other regulation to self-regulation. Sorry about this very long response, but
no, thank you. You've answered so many of our questions in that answer. So that was fantastic. I do have a couple clarifying questions about, you know, this relationship of scaffolded feedback and the zone of proximal development. So my first question, you had mentioned that this scaffolded feedback that targets their zone of proximal development, where we can, you know, they can notice forms that they are ready to notice and then, you know, move up in their acquisitional process. Does sociocultural theory have any perspectives as to, you know, should teachers just be correcting errors that are in that, you know, next level or in that current level? Or, you know, should we also be looking at errors that are perhaps below that level, fossilized errors, errors that the student is perhaps repeating, even though their learning level might be beyond that type of error?
I think from the sociocultural perspective, any error can be corrected, but the difference is the way the error is corrected. So the teacher would help the students to move from other regulation. For example, when students make errors that they do not know about, or for example, they are not very familiar with the language form, then the teacher would help the students to move from what they do not know at all, from what they know. So it's not that just students have to be completely know, for example, students have to know something about the form. The teacher can also help the students to create that zone of proximal development. And then once that zone of proximal development is created, then the teacher can help the students to move through that by providing appropriate responses to the learner's non-target-like utterances. So all kinds of errors could be corrected within the sociocultural perspective. But as I just mentioned, depends on how, the difference is how the feedback operates and how the feedback is actually provided.
So in this situation, are we considering like the teacher has to judge whether she will give the immediate feedback or delay the feedback, like in this proximal, like in this proximal development zone in this situation?
I think the idea of delayed versus immediate is a very interesting notion that I think may have a very important place in the sociocultural theory as well. Again, depending on how the immediate or how the delayed feedback is provided. The sociocultural theory focuses on or emphasizes the role of interaction and the role of social. It puts a lot of emphasis on the social dimension of feedback. So when the feedback is provided immediately, it emphasizes social interaction. And when the feedback is also provided delayed after, for example, the learner made the error, again, it's not just the teacher would provide suddenly one corrective feedback move. The teacher would get into a negotiation with the learner and would provide the delayed feedback in the form of negotiated feedback. So the difference between immediate and delayed feedback is delayed feedback occurs after the error is made, after an interval, and immediate is immediately after the error is made. But both of them within the sociocultural theory, both ways of collecting the feedback should be kind of like negotiated, happening through interaction.
So in this situation, actually, we have a question about the negotiated feedback. So in this situation, every interactional feedback can be considered negotiated feedback?
A negotiated feedback is when the feedback is in response to the need of the learner. So that is what makes it negotiated. So any move that the teacher would make would be based on what the student has said before. So it is appropriate and based on the learner's levels and also the needs of the learner. So, and that is why the teacher might go back and forth. The feedback becomes tailored to the needs of the learner. So depending on what the learner says, so any move that the teacher would make depends on or is contingent on what the student has said or what the student has already done.
Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
You know, quality professional development is such an important part of the teaching industry, but it's surprisingly hard to come by. That's why I was so pleased to come across Learn Your English, a company providing online teacher education courses with a fresh perspective. My name is Erin, and I'm an English language teacher. After a decade in the classroom, I found myself teaching the same things in the same way. My learning seemed to have plateaued. I wanted to take charge of my learning, and I really like how the online Learn Your English courses don't prescribe anything. They motivate me to reflect on my teaching and propose tactics and ideas I hadn't considered. If you're a language teacher wanting to learn inside your busy schedule, I highly recommend their online courses on Thinkific. Head on over to lyenetwork.thinkific.com. That's lyenetwork.thinkific.com. Take control of your education. You won't regret it.
Hi everyone, my name is Bhavna and I come from Nepal. You are listening to Teacher Talking Time, the Learn Your English podcast. Namaskar, sabai janalai, mero naam Bhavna ho, ra ma Nepali hu. Tapai haru sundai hununcha, Teacher Talking Time, the Learn Your English podcast.
So if you'll allow us, we'd like to, you know, readjust the topic a little bit. So pulling out of sociocultural theory, even though it's an amazing topic and we're very interested in it, but pulling back into corrective feedback in its own right. We've talked a lot about negotiated feedback and this idea of interactional feedback. We also know that there is oral corrective feedback and written corrective feedback and these all of these different types of feedback that teachers can provide to the students. So if you could maybe give us an overview, how are they different? How are they similar? How are they used?
How they are similar, they are all corrective feedback. So that's the similarity. The purpose is just to correct errors. So that is one common similarity among them. As the name suggests, oral feedback is oral. It is provided orally. Written feedback is written. So it is provided in written form. Of course, we can also provide oral feedback in response to written errors. So, but it is oral in response to written. The difference, and also we have interactional feedback. Interactional feedback is the kind of feedback that occurs through interaction. So the notion of interactional feedback in SLA is based on the interactionist perspective, and also based on the sociocultural perspective, and the assumption that through interaction, learners not only communicate their meaning, but they also receive scaffolding within the sociocultural theory or negative evidence within the cognitive interactionist perspective. So that is the difference between interactional feedback and non-interactional feedback. Another difference that might exist between oral feedback and written feedback is that written feedback is typically more delayed than oral feedback. Of course, oral feedback could also be delayed, but written feedback is typically after the learner has made the error. And for that reason, written feedback could be considered to be more delayed than oral feedback. So that's another difference in terms of the between oral and written feedback, which might affect their effectiveness as well. And we can talk about that if you wish later on.
Okay, that's really amazing, actually. But like, since we mentioned the written feedback, lately we have been noticing that written feedback is getting more attention or more research that is more research have been done on written feedback. So what does the research say as to the efficacy of written corrective feedback?
If we look at research on corrective feedback and particularly written corrective feedback, the research started by looking at whether feedback is effective at all. And we probably know, many of us might know the argument in the field made particularly by Truscott that argues that written corrective feedback does not play any role in language acquisition. So a lot of research started to look at whether corrective feedback plays any role. And experimental research started to grow on showing whether corrective feedback plays any role. And this research has consistently been showing that, yes, corrective feedback is essential. Of course, we might find cases where corrective feedback may not play a role, depending on the context and the way it is provided. But overall, in general, corrective feedback has been shown to be a very important way of facilitating language acquisition and also and students' written performance. Later research then started to look at whether there are differences between different types of feedback. So research started to look at, for example, whether in unwritten feedback, whether there is any difference between direct feedback and indirect feedback, when the feedback directly corrects an error versus when the feedback does not correct an error, but just provides clues to the learner, signals to the learner that an error has been made. And that is why it's called indirect feedback. So the research started to look at the differences between and among different types of feedback, direct, indirect, metalinguistic feedback, and so on. And then again, research started to move beyond that, looking at the mechanisms and the condition under which each different type of feedback might be effective. Personally, I think the question of whether there are differences between and among different types of feedback may not be a very good question, because eventually all different types of feedback might be effective depending on the condition in which they are provided. So when we ask what type of feedback is effective, it may not be a very good, I would say, research question. We should look at, for example, the context in which the feedback is effective and the different factors that might mediate with the effectiveness of the feedback and the mechanisms underlying effective feedback and the reason why we see differences in the effectiveness of feedback rather than whether there are differences, because there are differences. So the more interesting question would be why there are differences among the different types of feedback in terms of the effectiveness and why different learners would respond differently to different types of feedback. So these are very interesting questions that researchers are now exploring.
So that's very interesting. That makes me think back to getting written corrective feedback, you know, on my own work going through school, and some teachers would use codes and symbols and all of these different coded messages to give feedback, and some would use words and descriptors. So it really sounds like that's something that, you know, people are investigating in terms of written corrective feedback, is this idea of coding and explicitness and directness. And that's very interesting. But it also makes me think about how much feedback researchers are thinking students should get. Like, there's this question of, should teachers be correcting every mistake in written or oral or whatever the case may be?
I think that's also a very good question. And I think our immediate response might be, no, probably teachers should not correct all errors, because I think that would be very not only overwhelming in terms of like the amount of correction that the learners would receive, and also maybe also might have negative psychological effects on the part of the learner, because learners would be demotivated. They would look at how many errors I've made. So I think it's always good to be selective in terms of what kind of errors should be corrected and how many errors should be corrected. And I think second language acquisition research and is currently providing a lot of suggestions for teachers in terms of what kind of errors should be corrected. For example, errors that might have a root in first language, in the learner's first language, or for example, correcting or prioritizing errors that students may not have opportunities to notice during social interaction. Or for example, errors that might be more frequent. So we're looking at the frequency of the errors and see what errors students may make more frequently and prioritize those errors. So yeah, in response to your question, teachers should be selective, and current research provides lots of suggestions about what kind of errors should be prioritized.
Should they be selective in, or should teachers be selective in the type of feedback that they choose to give? Because, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe in terms of explicit or implicit, the research leans on the explicit side in terms of being more effective. And Kelsey tried to bring us out of this hole. I'm going to bring us back in to the social cultural theory that explicit feedback isn't always received positively by students or by learners. So part of our podcast is to help teachers use the research in their classroom. So what suggestions would you have for if research suggests one tactic is actually more effective, but that effective might not be as well received by their students?
I think although research is showing that overall explicit feedback might be more effective than implicit feedback, this does not mean that teachers should always provide explicit feedback. Teachers should provide feedback, as I just mentioned, depending on what the students need and the level of development. For example, if I make an error that is not an error and it's just a mistake, and the difference between a mistake and an error. Error is systematic. Error is something that I do not probably have any prior knowledge of the form. But mistake is something that I know the form, but I just made it because my attention was focusing on the content. So here I think I would be offended as a learner if the teacher explicitly corrects me, because if the teacher just gives me an opportunity for self-correction, I would self-correct myself. So here then I think the priority for the teacher is to use implicit feedback and the kind of feedback that just provides a signal to the learner that you probably need to revise and self-correct yourself. And when the learner would self-correct, then the learner would learn and the learner would be motivated. So no, I think it doesn't mean that the teacher should always provide explicit. Under similar condition, and for example, particularly when the learners do not have any declarative knowledge of the language form, so probably then explicit instruction and explicit feedback might be more effective. What when the learners have some prior knowledge, or sometimes the learner might have good knowledge, then perhaps the teacher should try to focus on a more explicit type. And that is where the sociocultural theory comes into play and has lots of implications for us. Because within that perspective, feedback is not defined in terms of whether it is more explicit is helpful or whether less explicit is helpful. Any kind of feedback would be helpful depending on the level of learner's development and the level at which the learner can appropriate the feedback.
I don't know if this is kind of related, but it's like we asked earlier about the immediate or delayed feedback. So I just want to like focus more on the effect of timing in corrective feedback. So we all know it's controversial. Like teachers say it should be immediate. Other teachers say that no, delayed feedback is better. So in your opinion, like when should teacher correct the students? Immediate or delayed feedback? Which one is more effective?
Again, if we want to know which one is more effective, we have to look at research and see which one is more effective. Theoretically, and now if we look at research, and also we look at theory, we'll see conflicting views and also conflicting findings. Theoretically, some people would argue that immediate feedback might be more effective than delayed feedback. And the reason for that is because when the feedback is immediate, then it occurs immediately in response to what the learner needs. And then the learners would pay more attention to that and process it more effectively. So they argue that immediate feedback might be more effective. Some other people, on the other hand, argue that no, delayed feedback might be more effective, because when the feedback is immediate, then in order for the learners to benefit from the immediacy of the feedback, they have to be able to compare what they said with what they received. And when the feedback is immediate, learners have to keep both their errors and the feedback within their working memory. And that is a short span. And for that reason, the students may not have a good opportunity to pay attention and to monitor the language form that they have used and the errors that they have made and also the feedback that they have received. So for that reason, delayed feedback might be more effective, because students can have more opportunities for monitoring their production and also paying more attention to the feedback and have more opportunity in terms of that cognitive comparison that I just mentioned. So that is as far as theory is concerned. So people have been very much interested in finding out what research would say here, whether corrective feedback when delayed is more effective than when it is immediate. If we look at research, we see for the same reason conflicting or mixed findings. There are studies that have shown immediate feedback is more effective. There are some other studies that have shown delayed feedback is more effective. But if we look at overall, it seems that if we want to say which one is more effective in general, it seems that most research is showing that immediate feedback is more effective than delayed. Of course, I do not want to say that, because research has also shown that delayed feedback might be more effective. I think it all depends on how it is provided in the context, the learner, the situation, and so on. So I would say to the teachers that they could use both of them as a mediating tool, depending on their objectives, the context. They are doctors, they know what to prescribe, and they are informed, so and make an informed decision without, for example, ruling out the possibility of using one versus the other.
I don't know if I have to ask this question, but approximately, like the time, if the teacher decided to take the immediate feedback just to stop the student and say, no, this is incorrect, you have to say it like that, or how it's supposed to be in this situation, or the delayed. Okay, next week, I'm going to tackle all of your mistakes or errors. I'm going to tackle it next week in a specified context of correcting the errors. So I don't know if I have to ask this question, but I just...
Yeah, I think, as I mentioned, if we look at research and if we want to, for example, make a conclusion out of this research, overall, it seems that research is suggesting that both written feedback and oral feedback, because written feedback can be delayed and more delayed. Naturally and typically, written feedback is more delayed than oral feedback. But again, it can be the amount of interval might change. For example, very delayed versus just not very delayed. So for example, the teacher might provide immediately a written feedback to a text message that the student has provided. So that is immediate written feedback. Versus, for example, when the teacher would provide correction on a composition after a week. So that is a more delayed type of corrective feedback. So research has been, in fact, comparing these different types of written feedback, either delayed or immediate. Overall, it seems that immediate feedback is more advantageous than delayed feedback. And I think this is also shown in oral feedback when it is delayed versus immediate. So if we want to just come up with an overall conclusion under normal or under constant kind of like conditions. So yeah, so that is what research is showing. But again, as I want to say that when we look at research, even when they show it, this particular type of feedback is effective, sometimes you will inspect the study, we'll see that perhaps the study is not very well designed. The variables have not been defined, or for example, the difference between this study and that study is not because the feedback is delayed versus immediate, but it is because of other variables, confounding variables. For example, one study has used recast as immediate, another study has used, for example, direct feedback as immediate. So the so we cannot compare the findings of these studies.
Okay, thank you so much. Actually, it was interesting to know. Question, Kelsey.
Sorry, could I let her? I do have a question. So earlier in this podcast, you were talking to us about the teacher really catering to the students' needs. And I'm putting a few different ideas together here. So forgive me if it's a crazy question. But in talking about the efficacy of delayed versus immediate feedback and that controversy and the conflicting evidence, would it be something to do with individual differences in the students that could really affect the results that we're getting from these studies and whether or not learners are uptaking or noticing these forms?
Exactly. There could be many reasons why a particular type of feedback is not effective. One reason could be the type. But when students receive feedback, it's not just the feedback. Students are receiving it. And students are complex creatures. So they have backgrounds, they have motivation, they have language proficiency, they have a particular L1. And also the teacher is also a very complex entity that provides the feedback. So there might be many reasons why a particular type of feedback may not be effective or may be effective. And that is why I just said that the question of which type of feedback is effective may not be a very good question in the first place, because when we find that a particular type of feedback is effective or not, it could be because of not just the type of feedback, but many other reasons, one of which would be individual differences, which could be many, like the motivation, language proficiency, cultural background, and also context and all these things that we talked about. So these all play a very important role in mediating the effectiveness of feedback.
Okay, awesome. So before we wrap up today, Professor, thank you so much for all of your knowledge and all of your information and just all of your thoughts. I think that we could continue to ask you questions for the next 10 hours and still have questions and still want to pick your brain. So thank you so much. We are wondering, you know, you're a preeminent scholar in this field. What are you looking at these days when you're thinking about new research projects and new questions that you want to answer in terms of corrective feedback?
Again, that's a very good question. When we look at research, as I just mentioned, and if you also look at the findings of the studies, if you read, for example, research articles and so on, you always see differences in results. So for me, variation in results of research has become a norm rather than, for example, something exceptional. So because we are different learners, so feedback would respond to us differently depending on the type of learner that we are, depending on the type of form on which the feedback is provided. So because of that, recently I have started to look at what is it that makes feedback in one context more effective than other contexts? And one thing that has come to my attention is the level of engagement of the learner. So I have become interested in learner engagement because learning is all about engagement. It doesn't matter what kind of feedback you provide. It depends on how the learner gets engaged with feedback, behaviorally, cognitively, and also emotionally, okay? So the teacher might benefit from feedback if they get engaged with it cognitively and also emotionally and then behaviorally as well. So I have been very much interested in how engagement plays a role in mediating the effectiveness of feedback.
And that is what I have been, a study that a colleague of mine, Dr. Maria Lira Gonzalez, and I are doing on the role of engagement in the correct, in the effectiveness of corrective feedback. So that is one thing that I have become interested in. Another thing that I've become interested in, and that's what we are working on with Eva, is the role of technology, particularly mobile language acquisition and the role of mobile technology in language learning. Because it seems that mobile technology has become a very important thing in language education and language acquisition. So we have become interested in finding out what role technology can play in helping learners or in facilitating the effectiveness of feedback.
Any interesting results about the technology?
One thing that is very interesting in technology, I think, again, if we look at, if we want to answer, for example, what role technology plays, of course, it plays a very crucial role. But one thing that researchers are interested in and looking at recently, not recently, but they have been looking at, is whether there is any difference between face-to-face feedback and computer-mediated feedback. And research, again, here is showing different results depending on what type of form is targeted and also what kind of context the feedback is provided in and also what kind of technology has been used. And again, depending on the feedback, whether the feedback is delayed, whether the feedback is immediate and all those individual differences that we talked about. So overall, I think technology is something that we should make use of in language acquisition and can be looked at as a very facilitative means for providing corrective feedback on language learning and teaching.
Okay, thank you so much, Hussein. But we will focus, we would like to have a time and another podcast with you to focus specifically on the computer-mediated feedback or the MAL, the CALL, those terms, and explain them extensively. But our final question, what is your recommendation, like, for a great piece of research or book that would help us as a learner to learn more about the corrective feedback? Any type of books or research or an area of interest that we can work on, develop more?
I think, as we have been talking, feedback is a very broad and vibrant area of research. So if you are a researcher, there are so many questions that you can tackle and you can address. Progress has been made, and a lot of progress has been made in this area, but at the same time, there are many questions that have remained. So if you are someone who wanted to do research on corrective feedback, I think there are lots of opportunities. And for example, one thing that we just mentioned, individual differences and the mechanisms underlying the effectiveness of corrective feedback would be a very, for example, good and important important question to address in research. But overall, if I want to give a recommendation again for researchers, when they are doing research is paying attention to the research methodology that they are going to use and try to develop a research methodology that is sound and rigorous. All the variables, for example, very well defined in terms of, for example, the outcome measures well defined so that we can have meaningful conclusion. So that is as far as the researchers is concerned. As far as teachers, I would say that teachers should become informed and educated about all these findings that we have found about corrective feedback. The benefits of the findings are not in whether a particular type of feedback is effective or not. The benefit for the teacher is that when the teacher read the literature on corrective feedback, then they become informed of how complex this is. And then they become informed of what the important role that they have to play in terms of the kind of decision that they have to make. So by reading more and more about these research findings and so on, then they become more educated and they understand the complexity of the feedback, the learner, the language learning, and so on. And that is very beneficial to teachers.
And of course, listen to this podcast series, because this is just one of a 7-part series, all just about corrective feedback. So if you're done, when you're done the reading, you can do the listening.
Yeah, I think teachers can benefit from any discussion of corrective feedback, because that would help them to understand what not only this area is, but also how complex this issue is. And that would also probe them into finding more and more about feedback and learning more about them. And the more they learn, then the better able they are to make decisions when they are providing feedback. So we cannot tell teachers what kind of feedback they have to provide. Eventually, it is the teacher that has to make a decision whether I have to provide an explicit type of feedback and an implicit type of feedback. And all this research can inform the teachers in terms of making an informed decision when they have to.
That's fantastic. Thank you so very much, Hussein. Thank you for all
You're
of your...
You're very welcome. It was a pleasure talking to all of you.
It was a true pleasure for the opportunity to get to ask you some questions, even though it seems like it was just the tip of the iceberg for what would be a very fascinating and intriguing field. It's been a really informative day. And also, Lena and I would like to thank the Teacher Talking Time podcast for hosting us and for allowing us this opportunity to ask you our questions today. So thank you so much.
No, thank you very much. No, thank you very much for giving me this opportunity. You mentioned that corrective feedback is a very kind of like wide area of research. And that is why we are currently having, and it's forthcoming, as you mentioned, the handbook on corrective feedback, which is about 40 chapters on corrective feedback. So if someone, as you mentioned, teachers interested in finding out about feedback, there are lots of books. And that is another book that is coming out. It's comprehensive and discusses various types of issues related to corrective feedback, theory, research, application, implications, and so on and so forth. So I think that would be, that is because feedback is so complex and broad, and there are lots of things to learn about.
Hussein, what's the name of the book and where can teachers find it?
The book is Cambridge Handbook of Corrective Feedback in Second Language Learning and Teaching. It's by Cambridge University Press. And I think it will be coming out in March. It's a very useful book. Of course, we have another book, Routledge, that you're familiar with. And that is also on corrective feedback. As I mentioned to you before, another book that I had on interactional feedback. This is a very important book, because it's all about interactional feedback, and the whole book is about interactional feedback.
Okay, so for the people who are listening, can you just read out the title, Hussein?
The title is The Interactional Feedback Dimension in Instructed Second Language Learning, Bloomsbury. That's a very good book in terms of it gives teachers a lot of not only information about theory and research on how to provide corrective feedback during interaction, which is, I think, that's why it's called interactional feedback, but also it gives students lots of tips about how to provide feedback in naturalistic language contexts. So I think that's a very important and a very, very good book that teachers can use as a resource.
All right. We will link all of those in the show notes for this episode and on the blog on our website, learnyourenglish.net as well. Hussein, thank you very much. This was fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you again for giving me this opportunity. It was a real pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Teacher Talking Time, brought to you by Learn Your English. Ready to take control of your education? You're in the right place. Teaching, professional development, learning. Expand your world with Learn Your English.